Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for every UFC event. With your hosts, TB Scouting MMA and
Guru Scouting MMA, back once again for UFC Vegas 39, also known as UFC Fight Night 194, and UFC on ESPN Plus 52. Mackenzie Dern versus Marina Rodriguez, a strawweight main event between two ladies, Marina getting her second main event slot, and Mackenzie Dern getting her first. But without further ado, we have longtime friend of the show, Schwan Humes, back with us to help break down the card. Schwan, how you doing, buddy?
You forgot to put noted author Schwan Humes.
That's right. I even got a copy.
Schwan, tell the people about yourself, man, just in case any new listeners don't know who you are. They may need to be informed.
My name is Schwan Humes. I'm known as the Black Jordan Breen on Twitter. I used to call into the White Jordan Breen show, and somebody actually referred, they're like, hey, you're like a Black Jordan Breen because y'all have kind of a similar style of breaking down fights. So I just took that and ran with it. But I'm a fan of mixed martial arts, combat sports. I wrote for different sites, Severe MMA, Combat Press, MMA Ratings, and I have worked for various amateur boxers, amateur MMA fighters, pro MMA fighters, doing scout work, breaking down film of opponents, or breaking down their film to help them get better. King Mo, Claudia Gadelha, Aliri, Joanne, Betch Kohea, just a couple different people. Alawale Bamgos, just different people from UFC, Bellator 1, who I've helped, and I just love the sport, and I'm kind of involved in it, kind of invested on the media front, and then in times when I'm helping fighters, you know,
you get ready for tournaments. You were part of a book recently too, right?
I contributed to Chris Rini's, I forgot the name of my own book I wrote in there.
oh no.
I cannot think of it, but I'll think of it in a minute. It'll come back to me. But Chris Rini, he's a talented artist and a writer, and he had multiple volumes of books, and he invited me to talk about the Rose Namajunas, Jessica Andrade fights because he felt like I cover WMMA very well, and he wanted kind of an inside perspective on the improvements and the differences between the first match and the second match and what kind of inherent flaws and strengths each fighter had and how that played out in the fights.
I love it. And guys, it's The Fine Art of Violence, volume 2.
That's what I couldn't remember. Too classy a name.
I know, right? But hey, it's an awesome book. It's got all featured artwork from Chris Rini, plus all the articles. Like our friend over here, Schwan, was so kind to do that. And, you know, I always got a soft spot for Jessica Andrade, so that's always a good time.
Yeah, the artwork in it is really good. I'm not saying that because I contribute, but the artwork is really good, and they have some very – very tenured and very seasoned ex-competitors and media and current media members who contributed to the book. So I like to think that I was the selling point of it, but clearly I was like low on the list of star power in the team of those authors.
Hey, you were a contributor, so, and we're always
Julie Kensey and what's this guy, Schwan Humes?
Schwan Humes.
Well, hey, we're always happy to have Schwan on the show. So. So hey, without further ado, I mean, let's get down into it.
We got a weird card here with 10 fights. A couple have fallen off as we've gotten closer. This is one of those cards I feel like the majority of any sort of casual fans may not recognize almost any of the names on, but it's one of those cards that many people will say is kind of a trash card, but it's actually like one of those sneaky good ones that for some reason overperforms. So I am still just as hyped as any.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we brought on the WMMA specialist here for our big, almost title eliminator, you might think, main event with Mackenzie Dern and Marina Rodriguez.
Definitely.
Yeah. I think that with cards like this, a lot of people, because they don't have star power, people say it's going to be a trash card. But there's like generally in combat sports, there's the best cards are a combination of this, but it's one or the other. You actually have three sets of cards. You have cards with important fights. You have cards with star power fights. You have cards with just good fights. If the best cards have all three, but generally it's either a stat card with names, a understat card because it has no names, but it's a bunch of scrappy guys and it's well-matched fights. And then you have the in-between where it's just important fights. They may be well-matched, they may not, but it's for number one ranking. It's a contender eliminator. It's a title fight. You know, the best cards have all three, but with cards without names and without big title implications for the most part, usually they end up being better because the expectation is low because you don't recognize the names. But when you don't have names on there, you can actually correctly match people based on their experience and their physical tools and their fight styles. When you have names on there, you got to do what's best for the A side. Nobody wants to admit that. But when it's a combat sport, you do what's best for the A side, unless it's a huge money fight and whatever happens, happens.
That's a good point. What you're saying, at least what I gathered from, is as a matchmaker, you can play more to like a viewership's matchmaking standpoint. What's actually going to look more aesthetically pleasing? What's going to actually result in a good fight, as opposed to maybe that being a secondary or tertiary option to really being what's the most important, being what contractually this A side to B side looks like.
A lot of times you come for the experience. Oh, it's a Conor McGregor fight. Whether it's good or bad, it's Conor McGregor night. That's an experience. Whether the fights are good or not, you go for the experience and knowing that you saw him live. With a card like this, there is no experience. So it better have some good fights on it.
I totally feel that. Point. And you know what? To kick it off, I mean, I just can't even buy into the opener that much. I'll be honest. I mean, it when you see Steve Garcia versus Charlie Ontiveros, it doesn't really get, you know, the blood pumping, too excited. Steve Garcia is a -320, and he probably should be, but like I don't even know like how he can trust a fighter of his caliber that with that wide a line. So, I mean, damn, I won't lie here. It's just so tough for me to want to even pick a side because like Ontiveros, I mean, he's just shown to give up. So like. I mean, what are you doing here?
So one of the things that makes me most concerned for this fight for Charlie Ontiveros is this man has been finished, I believe, all of his losses, all seven of them.
Yeah.
So that's really bad. This tall gentleman is how tall is he exactly? Doesn't say on Tapology. 6'2", there it is. Has it? Sorry. He's 6'2". For the first time in his entire career, he's cutting to lightweight. From middleweight.
I don't like that at all.
He's not, like, he's done welterweight. He did welterweight in Fury FC. He went to middleweight versus Kevin Holland for a ridiculous debut for no reason. But, like, at lightweight, I mean, he's never fought it before. Ever. Like, click through all of his Tapology. He has never fought at 155. So you have a suspect chin at 185. Listen, maybe you can say 170. Maybe you can say it's the size of the guys you're fighting. But you might just have a shit chin. And you're going to add an extreme weight cut to that. It makes me really, really nervous. On the other side of that coin, I really don't know what to think of Steve Garcia. His fight to get into the UFC against an LFA and against Jose Mariscal, I don't know. That was a really unimpressive fight just from all standpoints. He just kind of took control later in the second round and got the finish. But it was really more back and forth, took a lot of damage. I don't know if you can even trust him to get the finish. He should win. I don't really see Ontiveros really being any danger for him, but to trust him to get the finish, because that's what you need at these odds. At -300, he should be cutting through this guy. Schwan, I'm really curious to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, with Ontiveros, this is like the trend in MMA, because a lot of people, and I'm not bashing anybody, because some people deal with camps, but they deal with them on a certain way. If you deal with the camp as a media member or they give you access, your experience with the camp is much different than my experience, because I'm not there like for access or as a media member, like they brought me on. So they're doing with Ontiveros is they're probably figuring he's not a very big middleweight. He's not physically imposing, but at his height, with his length, if we can squeeze him down to lightweight, he's got huge advantages. It'll make up for his lack of skill with his length. Yeah. And it's 6'2", it's lightweight. Your jab is, if you have a decent one, your jab's almost impossible to get by. Your kicks, you're able to kick guys in a range where they can't even kick you back at. You can essentially control range, you can pressure guys, you can counter guys in a way that isn't of the norm in that weight class. And even on the ground, submissions are easier to get because you have more room, more length to your legs, to your arms, to hold position, secure an arm, do a triangle, armbar, whatever you want to do. You just have a lot of length that gives you a lot of room defensively and offensively. And they're assuming because those guys at middleweights are really small, light heavyweights. So, hey, if I move down this weight class, these guys can't possibly hit as hard. They might be faster, but I'm used to dealing with bigger, stronger, more powerful guys. So I should be able to physically impose my will and be able to grind on these guys and wear them down and chop them down in clinches and exchanges. They're basically taking a bet that his physical tools and his length and his height will offset any athletic holes he has and actually give him a benefit as far as his chin, because now he's getting hit by guys who maybe are small 170 pounders instead of getting hit by guys who are small or medium sized 205ers. That's the logic I assume his camp is going through, because otherwise there's no reason for this move, except do you think you have a physical advantage that you can maintain by squeezing down to the lightweight limit? You said, it's either going to be great or it's going to backfire, because if he's just got a bad chin, dropping another 45 pounds of weight against much faster and more explosive athletes is not the recipe to protect that.
Yeah.
So it almost be irresponsible to say that he's not going to get finished, considering how often he's been finished. Almost be like, you know, I mean, it's almost a foregone conclusion. The only problem with his opponent is, one, he's a Jackson Wink fighter. They're generally – no, strategically they're fine. Conceptually they're fine. But if you really think about it, Jackson Wink fighters aren't really good technically. John Jones has been saved by his chin and his length more than anything in his fights. Diego Sanchez is never really a technical fighter, maybe a great technical grappler. He's not a technical wrestler. He's not a technical striker. He's gotten by on aggression in his chin. Keith Jardine got by with his timing, his awkwardness. Holly Holm gets by because of her cardio, her athleticism, and her chin. It's not really a technical team in my experience. And Garcia, the fights I've seen of him, he's more of an aggressive kind of brawler guy with some general skills. He's not a great athlete. I don't think he takes a really good shot. He's not, super strong. He's not super dynamic explosively. So that's where my thoughts come in. It might be actually hard for him to get the finish, because when he's faced certain physical tools or bigger, stronger opponents, he's lost, and he's lost fairly decisively. Maybe he didn't get knocked out, but he's lost very decisively. And I don't know that he has a second or third trick to go to if his initial trick of aggression and volume and physicality don't turn it. If he can't get those tools going, I don't know what his plan B is. Even whether it's wrestling, grappling, or whatever, it's all physicality and volume. He's not a slick counterpuncher. He's not super technical. He's a guy who gets by on his aggression with some education and physicality. If this guy can manage his length and his movement, if he's a different fighter at lightweight, I don't know that Garcia has anything for him, because his whole thing is imposing his will. What if he can't impose his will? What if the guy really can make the weight? Like Jessica Andrade dropped 2 weight classes and turned into a dynamo. What if this guy can follow that suit? It's not likely. Yeah. But what if it happens? Right.
Yeah, it's a stay away from
it's
me.
It's pretty much a full stay away.
Yeah. There's no reason to trust Garcia at that price. And like, there's no reason to trust Ontiveros in general. So, I mean, I think it's safe to say I'll save my money. Plus 180 to go to the distance. I still don't even know if that's juicy enough.
Somebody's going to bet and be like, see, you should listen to me because I knew it. It's like, you can't. On this kind of fight, you can't.
No. I won't even propane.
Yeah, you're jumping off a roof and hoping someone catches you. That's what
honestly,
you're doing with
your heart. I feel the same way about this next one. Hopefully we can cut through this one a little bit quicker.
Honestly, I have zero tape study done on Juarez. Godinez, I was already kind of sketchy about to start with, but like, it's not Sam Hughes anymore and it's a late notice opponent. Yeah. There's no reason to even – yeah, I think Godinez wins. But I mean, I can't even profess to giving a good breakdown here.
Do we even have a line for the people?
I don't even have one posted on DraftKings yet. That's the other issue. Is like, now that I'm, hold on, let's see, is it updated? Yeah, I mean, there's still no line for it. So realistically, nothing to talk about, huh?
Yeah, just in general, Godina should win it because she's actually faced legitimate competition to a certain degree. Juarez has not. She's been a regional, and regional MMA is bad. Regional women's MMA is freaking, they're beating up on soccer moms. Yeah. They're beating up on below average athletes who are just doing this in their spare time. And that's why they think they're so great. And they come in and face real athletes and find out, oh, well, I'm an average athlete. Oh, crap.
Interestingly enough, she has two losses on her record to Ariana Lipsky and to Apollyonna Battaglio, both on the regional circuit. And she has a win over Vanessa Mello.
Those are at least three names we know.
That kind of tells you where she stands, because if you're the prospect on that, you're not facing another prospect on the regional level. They don't put you in against a prospect when you're a prospect. They put you in against no hopers.
Yeah, that's it.
So the fact that she fought them tells me she was not the moneymaker in this.
No. Hey, you know what? It's a good thing to know. And you know, maybe Godinez is a parlay piece, but as far as breakdowns go, I say we get on to the next fight. Yeah. So we got Charles Rosa versus Damon Jackson. And, you know, this one, we got Jackson is a -180 and Charles Rosa is a +155. I'm sniffing around here. Something smells a little fishy to me, to be honest.
I need somebody to slap me. I need somebody to shake me. I need somebody to wake me up, because some smelling salts. I don't understand what's going on. Why on God's green earth can I get Charles Rosa at +160 here? I legitimately don't understand it. You watched Damon Jackson get absolutely obliterated by Ilya Topuria, which, you know what? Fine. Let's remove that from the record. Fine. Because Ilya Topuria is a beast. Fine. The Mizrad Bekdic win. Have you ever seen something like that? Only if you've ever watched Mizrad Bekdic before. The dude dominated for over 4 minutes and 30 seconds of two rounds and managed to get submitted early in the third.
Oh, he was like, dead. Gas.
He's just dead. Like, I don't even, it didn't even, he just blew, like, he's just dead. He was just completely gassed. So the dude falls into a guillotine choke, lucky win. Great. That's his return fight back from in his second stint with the UFC, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, second stint with the UFC. Before that, the dude couldn't get a win either. He lost to Yancy Medeiros, no contest with Ronnie Jansen, and had a draw with Levon Makovsky. Like, the dude has done nothing. So in all those fights, he's done absolutely nothing. Went to LFA, choked out everybody. Great, you're savage.
Oh, you're getting a PFL? You're going to talk about that flying knee, like 12-second knockout in PFL? Because the dude was straight up unconscious. That was one of the craziest highlights. PFL plays it all the time.
By the way, that guy, Movliad Kabaliev, he's fighting Chris Wade for the PFL belt in 2 weeks or at the end of the month. And that's actually a really good fight. So I'm actually really excited for that. He just beat Brendan Lagnin by split decision, but that's not a card that we're covering. Yeah. I just don't understand what Damon Jackson's going to do.
He's like, got the height and reach, but
it doesn't matter.
On the feet, I don't really see him with the slick stand up.
I think people are doing the MMA math logic, because Damon has a win over what you would consider a prospect, a high ceiling fighter. His win over this guy is better pretty much than any win that Rosa has. And they're thinking, okay, he's got some size, he's got some length, he's got some athleticism. He's beaten the better fighter. That one fight he won is better than pretty much anything else that Rosa's done. So we have to favor this guy. Because if you look at Rosa's record, he's not beating really elite guys. All the guys he's beating are in that LFA kind of fringe contender type level person. All the better people he's fought, he's lost. So they're saying Damon's beat a guy who would probably beat this guy. So Damon probably can beat this guy because he finished him. That's the only logic I can come to.
Yeah. And I mean, he does have a nasty guillotine. That's definitely like a go-to move for Damon Jackson. He does have 14 submission wins, but Charles Rosa, you cannot choke this man out. Like his neck, his shoulders, whatever it is, whatever constitution he has, this guy is in arm triangles.
How about a black belt in BJJ? Really experienced.
I know, but it's just so weird because you've seen him in so many deep submission attempts, and he just like, it's like his neck just gets an unreal amount of like air going through, because I just don't understand how he doesn't tap out to some of these. Like it really is crazy.
If you're not betting if you like Damon Jackson and your play isn't Damon Jackson by submission at plus 330, I don't understand any of it, because yeah. I don't, because Charles Rosa is better than Damon Jackson everywhere. Maybe he's not as deadly with his submissions,
right?
But I think he's a better striker. I think he has better cardio. I think he's gonna put on a stronger pace. Damon Jackson gets cracked. Like he keeps his hands down. He looks like an old man that just gets beat around.
It's a poor man's version of any Brian Ortega fight. Let's say Damon Jackson is this dynamic submission finisher. Let's just say that's true. The thing about him is he's not dangerous all fight long. Generally, he gets outworked and out-hustled the majority of fights, and he snatches something. Whether it's in a scramble, whether it's early or late, he generally can't dictate the terms of fight in most fights against good competition. But he's always a threat to have that one moment. In the case of fighting Rosa, Rosa's a busier fighter. He's got a more developed skill set. So he should be able to outwork Jackson in every single moment of the fight except for like 10 to 15 seconds. But in those 10 to 15 seconds, Jackson is essentially the most dangerous fighter on the face of the planet.
Yeah, exactly.
That makes a lot of sense.
That's what I see. That's so funny. He's literally the Walmart Brian Ortega.
2.7 submission attempts per 15. That is extremely high. So that, it totally checks out. And I just don't think that he should be a minus 180 favorite. So Charles Rosa plus 155. It's not quite dog of the day, but I will probably put something solid on it. And Guru, I know you would like something else in this one too, right?
Do I?
I thought you were talking about fight goes the distance. I saw, you know, maybe
Yeah.
I liked it. You know, right now, fight props, you got fight go the distance, minus 150. Seems pretty solid. I don't think either guy submits each other, and there's not really knockout potential. So I think minus 150 goes the distance. That's a play.
I do have a tough time trusting Damon Jackson in general. Like,
that's fair.
He got knocked out by Topuria, knocked out by Kabaliev, knocked out by Kevin Aguilar.
The question becomes twofold. Is Rosa a good enough striker to really expose him? Is Rosa a good enough athlete to really punish him like that? And secondly, is Rosa a disciplined enough fighter that when that moment comes, because at some point Jackson's going to threaten him with a submission, is Rosa going to be able to find his way out of it? That's where we're going. When those submissions come, you know, it's like Volkanovski was in complete control, and then one second he was like, fuck, I might lose this title. It happens that quick, and that's what people are thinking, that a lot of guys really aren't good at grappling. You get them in a certain hole. Most guys really aren't good. They're only good in scrambles and transition. What if this guy locks something up on you? Do you have an answer? Most MMA fighters are not nearly the grapplers that we think they are.
Do we think that Jackson is as good of a grappler as Derek Minner and Bryce Mitchell? And, you know,
I don't think he's as good a wrestler. I think his long limbs, it's his long limbs and the way he's able to get like his forearms are so skinny. So like locking in a choke like that, it seems like he's able to get deeper than some guys.
Like he's not dangerous, but the last thing I'll say about this is even though in his biggest win, the guy gassed, the fact of the matter is he was still cognizant and locked in to acknowledge that. Cause I've seen fights before where a guy's been dead tired and the guy couldn't find a submission. He was too scared to try it. He wouldn't go for it. The minute he served himself up, Jackson took advantage of it. He was opportunistic.
I'll tell you, end of the second round, Damon Jackson had a deep guillotine also. So it wasn't just when he was completely gassed.
Mizrod just continued to kept shooting takedowns.
No, of course. But like, let's be serious here. So he had multiple opportunities.
He didn't mentally break and say, oh, it's not going to work. He went for it every time he presented himself. And with Rosa, when you fight a guy who's not a dynamic finisher, he's going to outwork you, but that means he's putting himself in the line of fire from minute one round to the last minute. So every moment he's in danger. It's just a matter of when is Jackson going to make his move. So even if it's a one-sided fight, it's always a dangerous fight because Rosa has to put himself in the line of fire to have a chance to win. He's got to be the busier guy. He can't just wait there moments. If you go moment for moment with Jackson, Jackson will win. So he's got to put himself in danger routinely throughout the length of the fight, which is where, once again, people start saying, hey, Jackson can get somebody late. If Rosa gets a half second tired, he gets too aggressive, this dude's going to finish him.
Yeah.
You have to at least explore that part when people are looking at betting lines, I think.
So if you were placing a bet, who's it on?
To be honest, I'm not amazingly impressed with Rosa. I feel like this is the trap fight for him. It's a guy he's better than in almost every single element. He's probably a better athlete, better condition, mm-hmm. better striker, better wrestler. And it's just a fight where you would think he would just clearly dominate. And most likely he will dominate until he doesn't.
Right.
and then it's a wrap. I mean, I wouldn't say it's a good bet, but I think Jackson has something for him. I know Jackson's not going to break mentally. I know that much.
So maybe that Jackson submission at plus three something, maybe that's interesting. Yeah.
Or do we think it's Jackson a decision? Do you think that you fade the narrative that Jackson can only win via submission?
I don't think he can win a decision. He's not going to be busy enough.
So you really do think that has Rosa ever been submitted?
No. He's been in many bad positions though.
Once again, I don't know that he's faced a guy like all the submission threats he's faced are guys who are actively searching for it. Jackson is kind of just outworked. Like same thing with Ortega. That's why they're so hard to figure out because they're not constantly searching and hunting for submissions. They're fighting your fight. You make a mistake and whoop, done.
Yeah, that's interesting. Out of nowhere.
I'm not saying it's likely. I'm not even saying it's a good bet, but I will go with Jackson to win by submission because he's not. I've seen him fight more. He will not fight consistently hard enough to win a decision.
Right. No, that's fair. Huh. Whoa.
Yeah, and listen, and like we said, that at plus 330, if you're betting Jackson, that before we even fleshed this out, really, we had said that was the bet if you were betting Jackson. So, by the way, for the previous fight that we're not talking about, we have Godinez at minus 245 and Juarez at plus 194. Just for
there you go. All right, good. So now next fight. I mean, this is probably one of my favorite heavyweight prospects to watch from like an entertainment perspective, Alexander Romanov.
I thought you were going to say Jared Vandera is your heavyweight prospect to watch.
Oh, that would have been funny. Well, Jared Vandera, he did actually come out and throw in quite the fucking striking performance on Justin Taffa in his last fight. But like, let's be real here. I don't think that's what Alexander Romanov is looking to do. And his 4.75 takedowns per 15 minutes says otherwise in 61%. That's an elite number as far as conversion. But, you know, the time to fade Romanov for me was last fight, and I did. And I did it with Juan Espino, and it looked like it was going great. And then Romanov quit after, like, the softest knee to the nuts. And, like, it really showed me a lot about Romanov because I was thinking, like, that cardio, got to fade him, you know, like, find the spot. And, like, Espino was the spot. Jared Vandera is not the spot. And I faded Romanov in his last fight. This is a step down in opponent. This is a guy that's not going to force the grappling pressure on him. I know they say that Vandera has a black belt, but like, I didn't see that fucking black belt when he was getting smoked by Sergey Spivak. So if Spivak couldn't do that to Alexei Oleinik, and also he couldn't do that to Tom Aspinall, then it makes me very concerned that he was able to do that to Jared Vandera. And Alexander Romanov is that guy that is going to force a takedown. So if Vandera couldn't get a flash KO of Justin Taffa, who is a guy much smaller than him, I don't see him getting a flash KO of Romanov. So it's a question of, can he survive the ground and pound and submission attempts of the first 7 minutes, or is Romanov going to gas out and Vandera takes over? I mean, the line is getting absolutely crazy on Romanov. It was minus 400 at one point. It's minus 630 right now. I'm probably just not going to play it. But Romanov by smashing, that's kind of what I see.
I couldn't agree more. I think very similarly to the Aspinall fight from 2 weeks ago or a few weeks ago. I think that this is a setup spot for Romanov. I think Vandera kind of won a fight he wasn't supposed to with the Taffa fight. I do think that the UFC, for whatever reason, likes Justin Taffa. And I think that they kind of are punishing him for that with this one. And I'm yet to see, unfortunately, FanDuel has the prop I usually like for a fight like this. Which would be Romanov round one and two, round one or two, I should say, or two, whatever. And that prop is currently not posted for FanDuel. By the way, we cashed that prop last week with Alexander Hernandez for anybody who was previously listening.
Okay, well, we have it on DraftKings. Alexander Romanov in rounds one or two is minus 225. So just like save your money on fight parlays.
Interesting.
So alternative round betting, yeah.
Just so Sean, what do you got? Just to give you some background on this, y'all remember in Bellator where that guy Gallagher? He used to fight at SBG. He got beat by
yes.
Ricky something. I forgot. It was Ricky Simon. No, it wasn't Ricky Simon. It was somebody else from ATT. But either way, he got upset, right? Mm-hmm. So the guy upsets him, and you would think they would try to cultivate the guy who got the upset. But because you were brought in to lose, what they continue to do is they just throw you in with another big person. So essentially, you're either going to get knocked off by the next big person, or you're going to earn your – you're going to legitimately have to earn your way into a ranking. There won't be any soft touches. That's right. Basically what's happening to Jared in this fight. He beat somebody he wasn't supposed to beat. So you would think, hey, maybe he's got some potential. Maybe we can build him up slowly. No, he wasn't supposed to win that fight, so we're throwing him in another fight he shouldn't win. That's going to be his reward. The guy he beat is going to get soft touch back, build momentum. Jared's going to get thrown in the deep end, and he's going to have to keep on swimming. And once he drowns, then they'll be like, oh, see, told you he was a can. They're going to kick him out. That's how that works. They're not going to try to build this new guy who showed something. They're going to – because that guy who beat Gallagher, they kept throwing him in with elite guys. And I'm like – I asked his manager, I'm like, why the hell are they doing that? They're like, it's just the way they have it set up. They wanted him to lose. He beat their guy. So they're not doing him any favors. If he wants to beat, stick around, he is going to have to earn it. That's what they're doing with Jared. They're giving him a fight against a guy who stylistically is probably a better overall athlete, a clearly better grappler, a clearly better wrestler, maybe who's limited as a striker and isn't the mentally toughest guy if he comes to taking punishment. But the style of striking that Jared has, I don't think it translates to beating a wrestler of this caliber. He's not a stick and move guy. He's not a fainting guy. He's kind of a I come and overwhelm you. And that just
He's going to end up on his ass. Honestly, TB, the way you said it before that you kind of fluffed off the minus 225, I honestly have to disagree with it, because when you look at the double chance, if we're going to handicap this fight or play it at all, because I do think that there's money here, because Romanov double chance
minus 280.
So that's by finish. And we just discussed how Romanov isn't the like mentally toughest. He's not going to have the cardio to push it. And Vandera's style is he's not going to play Mr. Cautious, pick him apart from the outside, stuff takedowns, and you know, try to wonder boy this shit. Like, no, he's going to go in there and take his fucking swings, and then he's going to end up on his ass, and then he's going to end up
0% takedown defense. Book it.
So minus 225 Romanov to win rounds one or two, it's not good, because it has to end. Small cage.
That's a big factor. He doesn't. There'll be no room to run. Even if he tries to run, there's no room to run.
And let's be real. If Romanov sits there and lays and prays for 15 minutes, like, I mean. I don't know. He's got bigger issues than my lost ticket. Like, I mean, he's not like Dana White will be fucking furious. Like,
so what about?
Do you want to be on Dana White's good side? I mean, you want to be exciting, but no offense, a win is a win. If I'm going to get cut, I want to get cut from the UFC on a win. Like, hey, I was 2-1 in the UFC. I left on a win. I don't know why they cut me. Boring or not, the loss is unacceptable. But like you said, if he gets in a rough spot, or if Jared just keeps forcing his way back to his feet and really resisting on the ground, there's a good chance Romanov might be like, oh my God, dude, this isn't worth it. And he'll mentally check out.
I totally hear that, but I just was looking here. Romanov and under 1.5 is minus 150. If you think, like I said, those 7 minutes are really where he's got to get it done. Minus 150. That's a little bit like, that's almost a solo play worthy right there. I know you love the plus money plays, Guru.
Yeah. That's interesting.
But if anything, I think if you really do think that Vandera is going to be that guy, which I don't, you could hedge out if you want to. I just think like Romanov, he's one of those guys you throw in your parlay, and like the price, like, damn, it's definitely not appeasing. But
I feel for you guys with a fighter like this, because he's got all the skills for it to make an easy bet, but he's so shaky up here that you can find a reason for anybody to beat him. You're like, yeah, he should do this, he should do that, but if this guy gives any resistance, oh my lord.
That's it.
You know what? I honestly almost want to, it could really go the wrong way. It could end in fucking 60 seconds, but I almost want to fade the narrative here. Spivak finished late round two. LFA loss late round two. Two decision losses and a round five Kimura loss. Like, those are not
immediate.
No. And they're certainly, I believe, after that 1.5 mark.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean,
either way the fight goes, you won't be surprised. If Jerry goes and gets totally tapped in 2 seconds, you'll be like, I saw that. You know, if Romanov quits and halfway through the second round, you'll be like, saw that too.
So honestly, it's probably just a stay away. The line is just too crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally.
I always hate that feeling. Wait, listen, we always can wait for weigh-ins and face-offs, see if like somebody looks like he's about to smash him or he looks scared or something. But like, I don't know, at heavyweight too, it's not like you're going to see much of a weight cut issue. So
no,
I feel that. Well, hey, I think we got, you know, at least a solid read on how the fight can go. But this next one, I think we got to break out the hammers here because we got Chris Gutierrez versus Felipe Corrales. And I got a feeling that we might have found a little spot over here, huh? Guru, take us away, huh?
Oh, I should take us away. Listen, take us away. Listen, I really like Chris Gutierrez here. This is a fighter and a type of fight that you look at and you're like, oh, -265. You know, is this a price that you're actually willing to pay? I really think that Chris Gutierrez is one of those quite talented up and coming fighters that you know, again, he doesn't have the wins over the best of level of competition, but he's through now, this will be his sixth UFC fight. Has done everything he can do with what they've given him, which is four wins and a draw. The draw, I believe, short notice replacement, which is Cody Durden, who's actually a pretty tough individual to fight. His last fight beating Andre Yule, who is much taller and longer.
Almost finishing him at the end of round two. You will save by the bell in that fight.
So, you know, what I see from this fight is, you know, Felipe Corrales beat Luke Saunders in his last fight, essentially retiring Luke Saunders because he was then relieved of his duties from the UFC. I also see, you know, not that it means too much, but that Felipe Corrales likes to alternate his wins and losses. Had a win in Jungle Fight, lost to Geraldo de Freitas, beat Domingo Pilarte, who we know is pretty booty cheeks, and then lost to Montel Jackson, who we know is, you know, decent enough, I guess, beating at least JP Bays in his last outing. And then, like we said, beating Luke Saunders. So, I believe that Chris Gutierrez will win, weight cut notwithstanding. I will always wait for the weight cut, especially with these littler guys. I like Chris Gutierrez here. He's 30 years old. He's in his prime. And while Felipe can get better at 27, I don't know. I don't really see it here. Maybe I'm missing something matchup-wise. Maybe Schwan sees something.
The weird thing is they fought if you really look at their opposition, they fought close to similar levels of talent. But it's like you said with Chris Gutierrez, he's made the most out of the guys he's fought. They're not great, but he's improved in his performances, his consistency, his dominance in it. He's looked better and better for the most part. He hasn't really taken any steps back. And when he took a half step up as far as opponents, he didn't get a win, but he didn't look like he was out of his element. He looks competitive. Against the same level of opponent, Felipe has, even in his wins, he hasn't looked spectacular. I mean, he's looked fairly pedestrian. Even in dominant wins, he's looked pedestrian. He never looked like he was going to take it over against Luke Saunders. I don't know what Luke Saunders' mindset was. To me, he didn't look like he was really engaged in the fight. He looked like he was prepared. He didn't look like he was prepared to fight. And if he won, continue his career, he looked like he was mentally checked out. So if you compare their opposition and how each has looked, Felipe hasn't looked great. I know he's young, and I think he can get better. But a mistake I often make when I'm on the show that I realize is I think that everybody has an MMA camp that is doing the appropriate things to get someone better. Regardless of whether I see it sometimes in fights or not, I assume, well, they see this flaw. It's been there for two or 3 years. They and have they to be addressing this. But they're not really. They're just figuring we're winning, so it must work. And Felipe's still at a 500 as a winner, and I'm sure his team has told him some nonsense about why, oh, the judges this, the judges that. Gutierrez has been getting it done and getting it done consistently more impressively, showing better athleticism, showing more comfort on the feet, showing more comfort in adverse situations. When Felipe has been given adversity, he's essentially folded. So I cannot pick someone who every time they've been tested has taken a step back. And the only time he's looked great is against regional competition. When he's gotten even against the fringe UFC competition, he looked regular, and that's a concern for me. You know, you can only beat who's in front of you, but he hasn't beat him in a way that's made me think that he's got a big resurgence coming as a fighter, and he hasn't showed any real big steps in between his fights. He's losing the same way, he's winning the same way, unimpressively.
I think MMA betting is very similar to dating. You can't date or MMA bet based on somebody's potential, based on what you think somebody can change, fix on, work on. You know what I mean? The diamond in the rough theory. I can fix them theory. It doesn't work. What the tape shows, what their history shows, what the actions are, not the words, not the fluff. What does the tape show? And like the tape, like you said, the tape shows that he's not trustworthy. And I don't, even though he's young and even though he could have the camp that could change it. And it's until he shows it, not doing it.
I mean, the biggest thing that stands out to me is that Gutierrez, he got taken down and controlled big time by Durden. That's why it was a 10-8 round. But he didn't give up and get submitted. He came back and dominated the last two rounds. And then you look at his striking defense, just as elite as his striking accuracy is. I mean, 59%. Kolaris' striking defense is 38%, and Gutierrez has good takedown defense. That's not a pathway for Kolaris to just control him the whole fight. I don't think Gutierrez gasses the same way that, like, Kolaris' other opponents have. So I think it's pretty easy. Gutierrez play of the day, minus 260, parlay it up, baby. We'll get to the other leg.
It's like that point you just said, though. Have we seen Felipe even get negligibly better striking defense or offense?
Nope.
No.
So, I mean, not at all.
I want to assume that he's going to turn the corner. But he's literally giving us no. It's like dating someone who used to beat their ex, and you're like, well, he's not going to beat me because he's nice to me in the beginning. Fool, what do you think he did to her?
Yeah. Nice. Speaking of getting beat, I mean, Montel Jackson lands 75-7, and then Luke Sanders in a loss lands 118-78. Kolaris gave up 40 significant strikes and still won the last fight. That's crazy to me. And he gave up a knockdown. So. That if that happens in this fight, my favorite play on this fight.
He's boxcar Homer.
That's it. And like Chris Gutierrez by knockout. I couldn't believe it given, you know, the power, the leg kicks, plus 350. The decision's minus 110. Fade the narrative. I'll take a Chris Gutierrez knockout. Let's go. Plus 350. So I'm going to parlay him, and I'm going to throw probably another 10 to 20 bucks on a knockout.
Chris Gutierrez is definitely part of my play of the day parlay. Which will probably be, honestly, with 9 fights, will probably be like my biggest play and possibly like my only play of like 3 or 4 plays. Like, I mean, really, this is slim pickings this week.
Play of the day, baby.
It's clear the UFC is trying to get him a big explosive win to start getting him the bigger names. He's supposed to come and crush this dude so he can be like, he's arrived. Now he's ready for the big guys. You give him a softball over the plate. He hits a home run. Now we can put him up against the big guys because he's coming off a big, impressive win.
Do we know what gym he's training out of? Do we have anything on Chris Gutierrez?
Yeah, he's at a Factory X.
I like that.
Yeah. Kolaris is Team Nogueira. So solid, but it's very grappling heavy, and I don't think that's going to be a great pathway for him in this specific fight because Gutierrez is shown to be very prolific in surviving defensively.
Team Nogueira's guys have a history back when DeSantos used to be with them. Of course, they're two namesakes. A lot of their guys are tough guys who outlast you. Till you make a mistake or till you wear down, then they take it over. A lot of their students are the same way, and that's great against a certain caliber of opponent or a certain opponent with certain limitations. When you're this far outgunned, waiting for someone to gas or to make a mistake is just a clear way to get outworked the decision and possibly stop depending on how dynamic they are. But they're just like their namesakes. DeSantos, when he faced elite guys, took huge beatings, exploded, won. Nogueira, huge beatings, exploded, won. Same thing with his brother. This is kind of the trend that their fighters have followed. So this being tough, being skilled and tough matters, but being skilled and so one-dimensional in how you fight in tough, I don't think that's a recipe for success.
Oh, yeah. Coco D1, loving what we're bringing it to the table, throwing up them guns. Yo, let's get on to the main. Is this the main card now that we're moving on to?
We are on the main card. It is time for the main card.
Look at this. We got a matchup here that's actually been a while in the making. In fact, Phil Hawes booked against Deron Wynn. Right now, the line, minus 310 Phil Hawes, plus 245 Deron Wynn. They booked another fight for Phil Hawes before this one for him to just kind of take care of business and go in there and get another win. And
that was supposed to be like a month or two apart, but it got canceled because of a Deron Wynn rib injury.
Yeah, but I got to say, I mean, Phil Hawes, he goes to decision in his last fight against Kyle Daukison. He actually showed like, you know, he could control the fight. He was working to the body. But, you know, something just gives me an uneasy feeling here because Daron Wynn like feels like specifically disrespected in this spot.
Yeah, maybe it's that minus 340 line.
Yeah. Also, five takedowns per 15 for Daron Wynn at a 52% clip, which is elite.
Maybe it's a 77% win percentage. Implied win percentage probability that's making you feel easy.
Yeah, and you know, Phil Hawes has also shown us that he can get in some real schedule spots and fights. The Imavov fight, he was on skates in round three. The Malkoon fight, you know, that obviously went nice and quick for him. But the Marquez fight, you know, he gasses out early. So we're betting on Phil Hawes's gas tank to have improved because Daron Wynn, he's not the type of guy where you just knock him out in the first few minutes because – yeah, he's faced a couple guys where, you know, Antonio Hoyo, he was piecing him up in the first round. Daron Wynn lost that first round, eating a lot of straight punches. You know, Hawes probably packs a little more power, but the question is, Hawes's gas tank, has it really been tested by someone who can push him defensively? Or is it more so that Hawes has been able to dictate the pace against lesser athletes in his last couple fights? I know Wynn is a lot smaller, but he's such a good wrestler. It makes me a little nervous if this fight extends past round one.
Even still, you've seen him tested and kind of start to fade. That Imavov fight was only a majority decision win. You know what I mean? Like he definitely started to fade that. You know, he's certainly suspect in that respect. My play on this fight, I don't really have too much of a handicap, and I'll let you guys kind of battle out a little bit more. This fight going the distance at plus money is the only way I see it. The money lines are too wide. It's sketchy for me.
Plus 120.
I really don't know. So I'll take the decision to the fight to go the distance at plus 120. Phil Hawes's last two fights have gone the distance. The Malkoon fight being the third of which he ended in 18 seconds. And then Daron Wynn's last four of his last five fights have gone the distance. The one of which not going the distance was when he was submitted in the third round by Gerald Mearshart. So it's going the distance. Unless
plus 120.
Lest we think it's a Hawes knockout, I really think that distance play is a major play. And one last thing, Sean, and then please go. No, don't be sorry, because I'm going way too long-winded when I said I'd be quick. One parlay piece I really like is the fight to start round two at minus 290. So I feel like – because for sure we're getting through round one.
Okay.
Again, as long as he doesn't get sparked. So –
all right, Schwan, talk to me here. What are you thinking?
Yeah.
My issue with Wynn is Wynn's tough.
Oh my God. Sorry. Holly Holm is out of fight night against Norma Dumont next week. Just breaking right now. Aspen Ladd is likely the replacement, according to.
Oh, my God. At 145, right? Oh, yes. I hate that so much. Anyway,
Sorry, Schwan. All right. Again.
We have to, breaking news must be released. We're on the cutting edge here. It's not journalism, sir. But Wynn kind of reminds me of Daniel Cormier in the sense. He's very durable. He has some athleticism. But outside of his wrestling, I don't know how good a fighter he is. Like, when y'all talk about him pushing Hawes, he'll push guys and wrestle and tie up and clinch with him. But is he really landing all that much strike? Is he really punishing guys like that? I don't recall him being a particularly dynamic or busy or effective striker with anything he's doing. So he'll push you by being in your face and getting in extended exchanges and making you fight off takedowns and stuff. But as far as an effective striker, who has he ever really effectively been 50-50 with on the feet? I don't recall that fight, to be quite honest.
Daron Wynn, the only one I could find, he did land 169 strikes, 137 from distance, but that was also against Eric Spicely.
I was about to say, I was like, wait, Eric Spicely?
Yeah, so
he just get knocked out bare-knuckle boxing or something, like bad?
That's what I'm saying. It's like,
I hear you on that, Sean.
It's almost like a poor man's John Jones, Daniel Cormier.
Wow.
Wynn has the toughness and athleticism to damage you in spots, but he has none of the subtleties or the crafts. He doesn't double jab his way in. He doesn't pivot, step over, and counter. Even his takedown attempts are more grinding and physical and aggression than I know he's got high level wrestling. But the way he gets to it in the cage isn't like some slick feint, slip under, get behind you, suplex you. He grinds you down, he pressures you, he wears you out, and then he just rides you out and beats you down and breaks you down. But on the feet, he's not very slick. He's not very creative. So is he really going to push Phil on the feet? or is he going to be like a target? Because I've seen him get, I've seen Wynn get rocked and backed up quite a bit in a lot of fights.
And against Gerald Meerschaert too. That's why he gave up his neck so kindly.
Yeah. So I mean, Hawes's newfound conditioning is probably a mirage. It's Mariah Carey said it's a vision of love. Doesn't exist. But the fact of the matter is, I don't know that Wynn's the guy to expose it. And if he is going to expose it, that means he's going to have to walk through hell against a guy who is actually not a high level striker, but a, for MMA terms, a fairly dynamic, athletically striker. And I've seen him rocked by guys who are not great athletes.
Huh.
And I can't imagine. And he's with AKA, I think. AKA has notoriously had poor strikers. They're functional strikers. Like, they can get the job done, but they take as good as they get. Name me one AKA fighter who hasn't taken a beating on his way to win. Khabib is only because it's wrestling, but when he's got his stand-up exchanges, Gaethje got to him. McGregor got to him. Daniel Cormier. Everybody gets Daniel Cormier. Uzdemir got to him. Gustafsson got to him. Jones got to him. Patrick Cummins landed on the feet. Everybody from that camp gets touch. Wynn is no different. I think personally he should drop another weight class where he could really impose himself physically. This weight class, I don't know. I think Hawes might really get him. It might get him early.
Okay.
Honestly, when you look at Hawes's record, his finishes are only early finishes. Like, I mean, his first fight ever was a second round win. But every other fight has been a first round finish for him. That otherwise it was a decision.
Yeah, so there's a chance that Wynn could, so let's say he rocks him early and Wynn could actually come on. But once again, I have to really believe that Darren Wynn is doing enough against a guy, and Hawes is a better athlete than any of the guys who's rocked him. So
and he's not making that weight cut.
Yeah, exactly. He's more set for his weight class. Wynn to me looks kind of, I don't mean disrespectful. He looks kind of chunky at this weight.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
So, you know,
and he gets super defensive about it too.
Yeah, kick his, stay a distance. You don't even go for the knockout. Stay a distance, kick his legs, throw a front kick to his body, throw a long jab to his body, long right hand to his body. The first round, second round, come out guns blazing. It'll be a knockout. It's real simple. He doesn't have good footwork. He doesn't have good striking. Just pick him apart. Front kick, front kick, front kick. He gets eager, step side, counter, check hook, done. I mean, Phil Hawes is not going to do that, but that's how
he's going to be. I'm going to ride with the sketchy place here. I might put like a little baby something, nothing official, but maybe a little baby something on Wynn. This is like, I feel like when you look at who's betting on who for this fight, it's just going to be a list of just like Phil Hawes. And then like there will be diehard MMA pod. I saw he's on Wynn, maybe someone else. But like, you know, shout out Clint, but like, that's my thing. Is like, I just feel like this could be like an ultimate fate in the narrative spot where we all look back and we're like, damn. Or is it Megatron Phil Hawes, you know, really getting built up, especially with DC's body, you know, it's a good name. Like,
I don't think that Hawes is an apple pie shitter because, I mean, if it is, it's what we would learn about Phil Hawes if he loses, honestly, we really won't, it won't be much. It would be what we always knew, is that his cardio is suspect and so is his defensive grappling.
All about slowly wearing out your opponent. That's 100% correct, man. Thanks for hanging in. And yeah, but you know, we did also hear the Kevin Holland stuff and Barton. Fucking legend. What a guy.
He is a legend. I was unbelievable.
Yes.
Has Darren Wynn fought anybody with any sort of wrestling background outside of Hawes?
You know what? I'm not even sure. Damn, that is a damn good point right there, because I don't think
and
so.
And Dr. Phil is in the building.
There he is, making his appearance. Yeah, Darren Stewart is like the only guy that, but he's not even like really a wrestling background. Yeah, no,
he's not even really a dentist.
Nah. So yeah, that's a good point. I mean, really,
like he should still dominate it, but when you have a dynamic striking advantage and you're a fairly accomplished wrestler with some athleticism, those takedowns aren't quite as easy to get, and you can get in some spots where you can be severely punished for those takedown attempts. That's essentially how Jon Jones shut down Daniel Cormier. Daniel Cormier is a much better MMA wrestler, but that length, that athleticism, that physical strength offset him just enough. And I see a lot of reflection between these two fights.
Yeah. Well, hey, let's, I think we fleshed that one out. Let's get on to our next fight here. This one is going to be really interesting. Sabina Mazo drops back down from 135 to 125 and meets up with Maria Agapova, who comes off of a pretty serious knee injury and a long layoff to come back. And
accusations here she is. Of being a crackhead.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes. What was that? Marina Moroz?
Yes, dropping the Iron Lady.
So, yeah, you know, I will say that is absolutely hilarious. And but I think, listen, Agapova, obviously, at this point, you would hope, you know, maybe, you know, she got a little bit of her personal life figured out, you know, all that stuff. You know, she said, you know, okay, all right, let me go get the training. I got my money now. I got a car. She won't fall off her bike and scrape her elbow like she did, whatever. But, like, when I watch back Maria Agapova's tape and I'm seeing she's just, like, extremely wild and loose with everything that she does. So yep. Sabina Mazo is extremely technical and patient, and she's a high-volume striker as well, and one that's shown that she can go to decision against – a lot of competition, even at 135 against Alexis Davis. So, yeah, I know it's very attractive to take the person that was like minus 1500 and now she's the underdog and she's had to have made a lot of improvements in her time off. Well, she got kicked out of American Top Team. So she's actually been training somewhere different recently.
Was she actually kicked out?
Well, yeah. She wasn't training with them anymore. I'll tell you that. So
is it for crack?
No, not for crack. I think she was smoking too much pot, probably is more what it sounded like. And, like, you know, Moroz just wants to take it next level. But, like, you know, just the way I see it with,
yeah,
like,
she's Russian. You might as well be smoking
so
crack.
So with, like, Mazo and Agapova, I mean, listen, they have the same experience, but Mazo's faced such better level of competition. And her stats are, like, elite level as far as output. And I'm going to try to
have the same experience, though.
What was that?
I said, do they really have the same experience? Because when I look at who they fought, one person's fought, you know, they fought some similar people, but one person's fought a much better, maybe not a higher ranked or better athletes, but just much more trained, rehearsed fighters than the other.
Yeah, you know, I would say it's more they have the same record, the same exact record. But when you flesh out that record.
Yes.
Yeah, it is nowhere near the same type of deal. It's not the same 9-2. You're 100% right about that.
I mean, it ultimately comes down to Agapova. She has a hard time versus a certain level of athleticism against Dodson. She had better skill sets than Dodson because Dodson is really a one-trick pony. But right, yeah. Dodson was much more physical, much more dynamic athletically. When she fought Tracy Cortez, who also has a shallow skill set, she was much better athletically. And now she's facing someone who's not just technical, but well-conditioned and a better athlete. That tells you all that you need to know about this fight. There's a good chance she gets stopped inside the first round.
Too. Yeah. So, yeah, Swan, you make a great point because I came onto the show with a bunch of props that I felt good about, stuff like that. Let me go hop in here and tell you Sabina Mazo inside the distance. What do we think that is? What do we think that is? Because I was looking at it before. Let's pull it up again. Plus 300. There you go. Boom. That's my bet for this fight. Let's go. Done. There it is. Yeah. That's a bet.
It's got to be. She don't like to get hit either.
No. Yeah. Agapova, no. And she got slammed around all over the place by Dobson. Listen, I'm just saying that I saw Sabina Mazo saying she wants to try out and show her whole skill set. And I also saw that Sabina Mazo had a fight where she gets 11 minutes of control time with 4 takedowns against who? Shauna Dobson. Ooh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I love a little MMA. But one of the things I actually do want to pull away from this fight very, very quickly.
Yes.
I think that the UFC likes Sabrina Mazo. I think that they view her as marketable or quote-unquote exciting. They gave her Alexis Davis in the last fight in hopes that she'd win. I don't think that was a fight for Alexis Davis.
No.
So
it was bad matchmaking, though. That was problematic.
So I think they they tested her with the veteranship. They maybe thought she was
and a weight class up.
She was and a weight class up, a little bit of a wrestler. But you know what? I bet she learned a lot from that. She's a young fighter, and they gave her at least a step down in competition. It could be possibly 2 steps down because we don't know really what Agapova's skill level.
Y'all really y'all watch like basketball and other sports, right?
Oh yeah.
So this is like what you call they made a bad foul call. So now here's the makeup call. Yep, we shouldn't have given you Davis. Let's get you in with Agapova. There you go. Makeup call.
Yeah. 100%. A little bit of a, not a reprieve, but like a condolence.
A step back. Yeah, a little step back.
If Agapova is, in fact, a crack addict, she's not going to get tired. And that makes her a threat. That is true. She will not get tired.
My God. But if she's smoking the ganja, she might need to take a little weed nap.
Yeah. And that's what happened in her last fight because that was not good. But yeah. No, yeah. So, hey.
She looks like she had a bad edible on that last fight. Jeez.
I'll take Sabina Mazo. Hey, listen, Sabina Mazo, money line is minus 165. Give me that. Inside the distance, plus 300. Give me that. And I think we move on to the next one, huh?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. I mean, this one, I think I found my second piece. We got Tim Elliott versus Matthias Nicolau.
You mean you think I found my second piece?
Uh-oh. Sounds like we're agreeing on something here because Tim Elliott, I think he's getting a whole ton of shine for grapple fucking someone who had no business still being in the UFC and Jordan Espinosa. And I know they call him the All-American and all that shit, but like Espinosa's defensive grappling, absolute garbage. Yeah, he stuffed some takedowns against Mark De La Rosa, but come on. Okay, that's all I'll say about that. Anyways, Tim Elliott, he's shown a proclivity to getting submitted in the UFC, getting finished just in general. He's only been knocked out outside the UFC, but he does have four submission losses in the UFC. And the thing that stands out to me is that a lot of the time, yes, he did have a quick one against Benavidez, a quick one against Nguyen, I mean, a quick one against Figueiredo, and then round two versus Roy Val. So is it really that out of the question that, you know, he gets wrapped up and stuff like that happens real quick? Yeah, I mean, I probably wouldn't expect it because Elliott, you know, since moving to Glory, he's definitely improved a bunch of his shit. I like that. But Nicolau's boxing and his defense, athleticism, his takedown game, him being safe in top control positions and also knowing how to work from the bottom. I really like Nicolau here. I mean, minus 195. Add him to the parlay. We're going to put him what did we have here? Our first piece was Chris Gutierrez, yes. And our second piece, Matthias Nicolau. So we got a minus 260 and a minus 200.
Comes together for a plus money, plus 115, I believe.
There you go. And you know what? The line is even moving a little. Nicolau back down to minus 195 right now from a plus 200.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't love this fight from too much of a prop standpoint.
No.
Nicolau with 10 career finishes and 8 career wins by decision. So he's about 50-50 in that respect. I guess a little bit higher. I'm not a math guy. And Elliott, you know, like you said, is not going to get finished via strikes. He is the zombie. He walks forward with his hands down. He likes to get his nose broken. He likes to get woken up. He does a lot of head movement. He likes to be really awkward. He lands about 4 takedowns per 15 minutes. So I do expect a ton of grappling, and I do expect that to make Nicolau not only tired, but not able to throw as much into his strikes, which now that I'm starting to talk it out, makes me kind of think it still goes the distance. But it's if I bet the distance, that means I'm just going to be sweating the whole time. So I do think that Nicolau gets it done. I don't think that he wins all three unanimously. I think it could very well be a split, something greasy. But what is it? Nicolau by decision plus 120. I don't know. I like Nicolau. Nicolau
straight up. Done.
I mean, the only way I think he loses is if his cardio isn't on point. He looks like shit on the weight cuts, which, by the way, like we said earlier, these younger guys gotta watch those weight cuts super, super closely.
Mm-hmm.
But Elliott specifically has been one of those guys that struggles a lot with the weight cut. But with his girl Gina Mazzani and coach James Krause, you know, they really do keep him under a tight.
He's been in great shape. Game
plan. Yeah. So, you know, and at this stage of his career at 34, I think he's learned that he doesn't have time to fuck around. So I think he's a little bit more serious. But that being said, he's still walks forward with his hands down, still awkward, still relatively low fight IQ in that respect. What do you – you've been quiet here, Schwan. What do you think? Give us a scoop.
I like his rededication to being in shape. At his age, he needs it. And with his style, he needs it because even though he's had some pretty snazzy submissions, to me, he's not really much of a technical submission person. He's more of a – When I see him, I see a guy who spent a lot of time grappling on the mats, like sparring. So he's got a certain kind of comfort and flexibility and reactive. He kind of operates in chaos. There's not a real structured way he approaches grappling or he approaches wrestling. And that's what makes it hard for people to handle him because he won't secure a position. He'll just leap into submission. He'll just spin over here and go for this. He'll be in a bad position and he'll just try to explode out of it. He doesn't have a systematic way of working out of it. So he makes you work because instead of him going from A to B to C to escape, he's going from A, skipping B, going right to C to get out. And it's hard to figure out his rhythm and figure out his timing. The further along he goes, the easier it is to figure out what he's doing and how to cut it off. It's same thing on his feet. He likes to move around. He likes to dip and hop and jump all over. But there's not a real offensive structure to what he does. You'll miss two or three shots, but he won't make you pay for them because the way he dips and moves puts him out of position to actually counter you consistently. And even when he puts shots together, the way he throws his shots kind of serve him up to be countered or to be taken down. And he's okay with that because he forces scrambles and looks for submissions. Against Nicolau, I essentially feel the first round will be the most trouble he gets him in. And if he doesn't finish him in that round or put him into tremendous duress, Nicolau should slowly be able to chip him up and break him down. Because even at this age, being in good shape, even in his prime, Elliott got tired against Demetrius Johnson. He got tired in all his fights. He gets tired because of the manner in which he fights. He doesn't set things up. He doesn't go through a structure. It's boom, 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 all over. He could use a slip and a parry, but he's going to use a big jump and a dip, an extensive energy-burning dip to get away from your shot when he could have just went like this. He's going to this. He can't maintain that pace, and he doesn't have any fundamentals, in my opinion, good enough fundamentals to conserve his energy and protect himself defensively. So Nicolau might have some trouble in the first round, but after that, he's going to find his time. He's going to start chipping away because Elliott runs out of ideas. And once he runs out of ideas, he relies on his toughness and his willingness to take chances to win fights. Yeah. So if he's just be methodical and defensively sound, you'll outwork him. I don't think there's a finish, but I don't think there's a finish. I think y'all are right. But given his age and how long he's been fighting and how reckless he gets defensively, that finish is coming. That finish is coming sometime in his career, sometime soon.
I love it. A couple random things. I love this fight to be won by split decision, which is a prop on DraftKings at +330. And then I also like, what is it, the fight to be fight of the night possibly, right? Do they have – I don't know what they have that prop at. Sometimes DraftKings has that prop. I think that is very likely.
I think that this
on a card that really could very well lack the may have a couple performance of the night bonuses with a couple finishes. I think will really lack the fireworks fight needed for a fight of the night. I think that this fight could be the one, if maybe not the co-main event too, because that one's going to be another sketchball fight.
Yeah, so I mean, the way I see it, that's a parlay piece right there. I'm not going to touch the props on this one because I just feel so good about the money line. And
I agree.
It's time for the co-main event, huh?
Weird-ass co-main event.
Yeah, where did this come from?
I honestly think now that we really fleshed it out, now that we talked about it, why the fuck isn't this Tim Elliott? Why isn't Tim Elliott the co-main event? They gave him and Ryan Benoit co-main event. Why isn't it co-main event now? Like, they're marketing Nicolau by giving him this fight. Like, why not market Nicolau more by – I guess maybe they like Randy Brown. I don't understand that.
I don't think they like him that much. They haven't really pushed him in any real way. I mean, he hasn't won enough to be pushed, but – I don't know that either one of these guys are the future of their division. I'm kind of caught off guard by this myself. I mean, it should be a good fight, but is it really important or future stewards of the division?
I think they were looking for some fireworks, right?
I just think that I feel like Randy Brown is hitting that stride right now, where Jupiter interlines with Mercury. Like, you know what I'm saying? I just feel like all the things are kind of coming together right now for Randy Brown, if that makes any fucking sense at all. At 31, I feel like he's coming into his prime. He had that great win versus Alex Oliveira.
Is that really a great win, though?
Listen, man. Yes, I think so. Because Nico Price is somebody I thought to be more physical and more technically sound than Randy Brown. Or not technically sound, but just fucking better fighter, more brute. And obviously, since Nico Price smashed him with those hammer fists, but Randy Brown at least finished Alex Oliveira, and whereas Nico Price barely was able to get that job done last week.
Yeah, so, I think Randy Brown has impressive boxing.
Yeah,
I don't know if I trust Jared Gooden to use the leg kicks necessary to dissuade Brown from coming forward enough.
Jared Gooden's low output is his problem.
I think he just stares in the mirror. Yeah.
Yeah.
He admires his work as well. He might land a good leg kick and then stand right in front of him for the through punch combination return. He's going to catch every bit of that. So he admires his work. He's not a dynamic enough striker to admire his work, and he's not very busy. So even if he finds something, he's not going to attack the leg nearly enough historically to do enough damage to offset what Brown's going to do, because Brown fought Nico Price. He's not going to be offset by one or two leg kicks. He'll walk through some fire. He fought Alex Oliveira, who's a dynamic
Vicente athlete. Luque.
Yeah, Luque. He didn't back down. He walked into the fire. Good is not that kind of athlete. And defensively, once you get past the variety of his weapons, he does not have much. You get into that mid-range with him, he's a non-option. He's a non-option defensively. Mm. So Brown's a better athlete. I think he's a better striker. I think Gooden has a wide range of skills, but I don't know that he's got the athleticism or the skill level to dominate anywhere.
Yeah, I think Brown, even it could be interesting enough where, like, he's got such long limbs that he could hurt him. And this is something that we saw in his last fight. He lands that right hand, and then down goes Oliveira, and boom, he jumps on the back. Rennie Brown, his finishes in the UFC, I mean, he's got two knockouts, three submissions, and two decisions.
Yeah, Rennie Brown. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, like, listen, Rennie Brown by submission plus 330.
I was just thinking that Gooden has only been finished once, which is some weird strike against the cage against Bruno Oliveira, which is a name we should recognize.
Yeah.
It's just I don't know what that fight was. I'd have to see that in Titan FC. I'm just not sure. I feel like Rennie Brown, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I'm being too cautious. What's Rennie Brown double chance? Rennie Brown by finish is plus 120. Oh, that's kind of interesting. Because the other,
I like this fight inside the distance.
I don't know. Since Gooden is so low volume. Yeah. As a low volume martial art person myself, I'm like, I never fought, but in sparring, people be like, it's really hard to put something together on you because you're not giving enough for me to work with. Oliveira served himself up. Even Luque would serve himself up because he's so determined to damage you. Gooden isn't trying to damage you. He's trying to win a professional fight. Yeah. He's trying to land efficiency and accuracy. He ain't trying to blow you out there. So he's not going to serve himself up to big counters or submission finishes. He's going to pick his spots and be very careful in what he does. So like I said, you can lose and then you can lose. Gooden only wants to lose. He doesn't want to lose. He'll get out. He's not taking chances to get KO'd or submitted. He could, but he's never taken those chances. And that's why he's been alternately so successful, but not successful against a certain caliber of opponent. And Rennie Brown only loses to a certain caliber of opponent. Jared Gooden is not that caliber of opponent.
And you know what? As long as there's a good weight cut, let's fade that narrative. Rennie Brown has come to a finish in his last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 fights in a row. His last decision being with Mickey Gall and Bilal Muhammad. I think he's due for a decision.
Huh.
I actually like that. And Rennie Brown by
plus one,
plus 220.
To go the distance is plus 150.
Yeah, and that's, to me, that's like the plus 140 on FanDuel, so plus 150 is much better. Why not fade that Vegas narrative? Vegas thinks that there's a finish.
Wow.
I don't see why not.
Okay, especially when Guru.
You see Gooden
fade the narrative
decision with Joban and Nurmagomedov, which plays right into what Schwan said about being a professional fighter, because I don't think Abubakar Nurmagomedov and Alan Joban are totally professional fighters, and he was able to stand right in there, and then as a professional he absolutely starts Nicholas Stoltz, who we played actually on this show.
That's right. Yeah, so yeah, I think that go the distance. Yeah, I like that a lot. So, wow. I guess we made it, huh? Here's our main event.
Is that our dog of the day play? Like, what's our dog of the day?
If you want to make that yours, I just found
it. Oh, uh-oh. Uh-oh, did I just blow the wad? What's the
dog
of the day?
Here we go.
Dog of the day?
We got Mackenzie Dern versus Marina Rodriguez. And I will admit there is probably some level of bias here. So follow, if you will. So let's break down the bias real quick. So if we go, yeah, exactly. Here we're gonna go in.
Your bias.
Okay, so first off, Marina Rodriguez, I have been fading her consistently up until the Michelle Waterson fight. I took Amanda Ribas, I took Carla Esparza. I was not betting when she fought Calvillo. So That's about as far back as my Rodriguez train goes. However, now if we go to the Mackenzie Dern train, this is where things get slightly embarrassing for me. I definitely bet Randa Marcos against her. I definitely bet Vina Jandiroba against her. And I definitely bet Nina Nunes against her. I didn't bet Hannah Cyphers against her. But yeah, so I guess I can hang my hat on that. But so here we are. Mackenzie Dern, someone that I actively try to fade because when you watch the tape, there's so many attributes that make you want to fade her. However, all it takes is a split second for her to get you in one of those positions. And we're talking submission city. So Amanda Ribas did show the pathway. It's about aggression, physicality, top control, and takedowns. I don't think that's a pathway for Marino Rodriguez. However, I do think that there is a level of physicality that'll make the initial takedowns much harder than anyone that Mackenzie Dern has faced before. Now, when I see Rodriguez getting taken down, it's off of like chain attempts for the most part. However, when she fought Cynthia Calvillo, she was just getting, you know, like blast double leg, but Calvillo missed weight by 5 pounds and was forced to move up. So I don't take as much into that. Also, Carla Esparza, a very high level wrestler, also able to land some single shot takedowns. But when Rodriguez is facing, you know, a lower level on the wrestling, she's able to stuff the initial takedowns, and she does have a 62% defense. She did well against Wetterson with the footwork. She didn't do great against Ribas, but she does do well to wrap up and get a close guard. She throws elbows from the bottom, and while she is a little too comfortable sitting in those positions, I don't think Dern is one of those, like, position grapplers where she's looking to secure a position and hold it for control time. She is going to be actively hunting for submissions. However, Mackenzie Dern's 10% takedown accuracy really doesn't lend to great confidence in her landing the takedown and getting to submission dominant positions. Because against Nina Nunes, she's facing a fighter that comes off of pregnancy, and that obviously changes your body. And Nunes looked to be scared for a lot of that fight, really circling around against someone that, you know, Dern's coming in and firing hard, but she's also eating some counters. If she's eating those counters against Rodriguez, it looks very different. And Rodriguez is much more pointed and technical in the way that she's able to get you coming in. Now, Rodriguez needs to keep this on the feet. There's no doubt about it. It gets to the mat. There is going to be a chance Dern gets the submission, a good chance. And I look very silly here. But Marino Rodriguez, plus 150 on DraftKings. That is my dog of the day. I just think that the stand-up is too much. And while Dern has shown improved stand-up combos, walking forward, the ability to take a punch and go through it, I don't think she's ever faced a striker like this before or someone that does have, you know, maybe not the best get-up ability, but very good closed guard and defensive grappling capabilities. So talk me down off my dog of the day, boys. Hit me. Give me your burst.
I have no, man, it's hard for me personally to talk you off that. I keep going back and forth. I'm trying to find where I think I want to play this fight. And I don't really, I think maybe just fight to start round two at minus 310. Like that's so, that's like the biggest pussy play ever. I'm so unsure. Exactly how this fight plays out. I know that I sent you earlier in the week, TB, on Tuesday at 1 o'clock. You could get Mackenzie Dern by submission at plus 150 or Mackenzie Dern by submission and in round one at plus 550. Now that same line is Mackenzie Dern by submission at plus 100 and Mackenzie Dern by round one says submission at plus 410. That's like significant value loss. So, I mean, I don't know if that's the book readjusting the props based on money coming in, because that's the obvious way that Mackenzie would win. All of her submissions in the UFC have come by in round one. We watched Marina give up a takedown to Carla Esparza, I mean, less than 30 seconds into their fight. We also know that Carla Esparza is an unbelievable wrestler and Mackenzie Dern is a shit wrestler. But we also know from the Randa Marcos fight and watching fights in general that you don't need a takedown to get the fight to the mat. You can catch a kick, which Marina throws a lot of. You can trip. You can get against the cage. There's a lot of different ways to get to the mat. we also know that Mackenzie Dern, because of her grappling advantage, doesn't mind throwing absolutely everything into her strikes, because it will cause a clinch. It will cause a clinch position, which even if Marina is stronger in the clinch, better in the clinch, all you got to do is body lock and like, what is it? Go like watching. If anybody's ever seen Psych, don't go boneless on me, Gus. You just grab her and you just go boneless and you just take her to the ground with you with all your weight. And you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Is Marina strong enough? Is her Muay Thai that good? Is her takedown defense, her underhooks, all that shit, is it going to be good enough to keep this fight standing? I feel like the play I want to take is the over, but I like the over 1.5. Now I see it over 2.5. So I don't really like that as much. So hit me, Schwan. You're the expert. Can you either get me on Tyler's side or you know, give me what's the word? Some credence to my skepticism.
I see why people like Marina. The thing about her is she has a width of skill. I don't know that she's particularly deep in any area. I mean, like, yeah, she's a good striker, but she's not like Valentina, Joanna good. She's very good, very competent. She's good, competent in wrestling. Even though her takedown defense isn't great, she's not, like you said, she can defend the initial takedown. You don't just bowl her over by touching her leg. She's not like that. And she can grapple. So it's why I told everybody I thought she would beat Hibas, because Hibas is used to getting certain positions and dominating from certain positions. And then this was going to be the first opponent she faced who could challenge her and who would fight back in every range. And sometimes it's not even fighting back intelligently. It's just being able to make them work, because everybody has a safety zone where they know they can hold you down or just be safe and dominate. With Marina, there's very few safety zones because she's competent in every area. The one thing Marina has an issue with, though, is when she's faced a certain kind of athlete. I know that Calvillo missed weight, but that just lends credence to, against a big, strong opponent, that person was able to take her down and get positions. Against Randa Marcos, who's got terrible IQ, who's iffy technically, but is a great athlete who's physically strong, she was also able to get her into certain positions. Against Amanda Hibas, she got put in certain positions. She just was able to survive them. Hibas almost finished her in the first round. She had moments where you could have really said, hey, you know what? She's coming on. She's close to finishing. The problem with Marina is, because she's got so much width, she's comfortable everywhere, which is great because she can fight you from everywhere, but it's also a downside because she gets comfortable everywhere. And against Watterson made a late round surge against a player who she was much smaller than, who she was at that weight, a much less athlete, didn't hit as hard at, and she still was able to get her down and back her up. Michelle Watterson doesn't get anybody like that and back anybody up. Who's the last person Michelle Watterson backed up outside of Marina? I can't remember the fight where she's actually backed someone up physically. That does not happen. And it happened against Marina. And Marina landed a bunch of shots. And I don't remember Michelle being particularly close to being finished either. Dern is a big, strong, durable fighter. Even at her worst, Dern was still blowing the doors off of girls. And she couldn't get takedown. So she was physically throwing them up against the cage and hitting them with these big haymakers and backing much better strikers up with volume and aggression. And now she actually has a system of striking behind her. She's still the better athlete. In my opinion, she's still bigger and stronger, and she is light years better on the ground. 100%. And like you said, she can throw whatever she wants on the feet, because whether you drop her or whether you catch her kick and take her down, you're putting her right where she wants to be. So whether she gets the takedown or you get the takedown,
doesn't matter.
She's right where she wants to be. So essentially, part of Marina's game is out. She does not want to offensively wrestle with her. And even if she gets in tie-ups and she can defend the takedowns, Dern can use that to wear her down, because Dern doesn't care if we go to the ground. Dern could be dead tired. She's going to submit you. So she can put all her energy into faking that takedown and slowly take the spring out of that step. Now you can't dance. Now you can't throw volume. Now that counter that would have been pitch perfect, that counter hook, now it's half an inch off and half a second slow. So that knockout shot is just a shot that cuffs me, and I get my hands on you and throw you to the ground. A lot of this comes down to attributes and mindset. Dern is much more busy as a fighter. She's not as lazy. She's much more structured.
Mindset.
Yeah, and she has every physical advantage over everybody. That's why she's been able to navigate her shit wrestling. She's a great grappler, and she's got every physical advantage over 90% of the fighters in the division, Marina included. So I don't see how Marina, and when Marina faces better athletes, she always struggles. She always struggles against durable people and athletic people. Mackenzie, as flawed as she is durable and athletic. That's and a bad recipe. That's a bad recipe.
Shout out to former guest, Lucrative MMA, James from Lucrative MMA. He had a tweet this week that I really like, and it's that similarly, Casey O'Neill and Mackenzie Dern have the tape that when you watch, you want to keep fading, but they keep winning.
Yep.
And it's just, he's always, you know, just so insightful, James. And just that tweet, just that thought. And it's exactly that. And it's what I had said to you when I heard Eric Nixick on MMA Lock of the Night show. It's just when he talked about Casey O'Neill in the gym, that ferocity, that attitude, that I don't care what it's going to take. I'm going to rip your limbs off. You're going to have to put me down to put me out. Like, I mean, you're going to have to put me out to put me down, whatever. Like, that type of ferocity, like, it's not Damon Jackson. You know what I mean? It's you really, like, you can be a professional fighter and not have that ferocity.
Dern's the same way. You've never seen her breaking in a fight.
Dern has that ferocity.
She got thrown left and right by Hebus, and she got right back up to get thrown again. At no point did she has it was dumb IQ-wise, but you're like, she's not afraid of getting thrown? She's not embarrassed? Like, she just, I don't care. Let me get at her. You can't teach that sort of thing. Rodriguez can outskill, just like Shevchenko was outskilling O'Neill. Then O'Neill just said, "You know what? To hell with this. I'm not tolerating this position anymore." Go ahead.
No. I cut you off.
It's like, I'll just give a backstory. Like, you know, Mandy Bobby Cooper, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She used to fight the UFC. At one point, I knew her coach. I knew somebody who knew her coach, and I did this long breakdown about Cynthia Calvillo that another camp stole to help beat her. I know this for a fact because they emailed me pictures of all my notes where they're highlighting that shit. Didn't give me any credit. This is actual fact. I can't say the person's name because I don't want to get in my trouble. But he saw what I wrote, and I did a breakdown of Amanda, and he liked it. So he's like, give me some input on Amanda Bobby Cooper. She's going to be fighting such and such soon. And I just started listing off the things she does wrong and how it's going to expose her against Dern, because Dern is limited as she is. Dern is a real fighter, and she's got great athletic ability. And they didn't listen to me. They're like, no, we got this striking. We got this plan. And I'm like, Dern's just going to jump on you, and she's going to blow your doors out. She's either going to knock you out, or she's going to submit you. Dern just gets in her face, and Cooper did not expect her to be as ferocious or as intense with her strikes. And so she just got completely overwhelmed, got beat the hell up on the feet, thrown to the cage, finished, submitted just like that. And that's when Dern didn't have a lick of structure to what she's doing on the feet. It was just aggression and a mean streak. Now she actually has structure because Perillo is teaching her how to touch the body, how to occasionally use a jab, how to slip a little bit. She's not defensively sound, but she will make you pay for every shot you land. And I don't know that Marina is a good enough technician, nor do I know that she's a good enough athlete to do enough harm that she's going to break Dern's will. Dern was in a war with Janjarova. She was willing to engage with Ronda Marcos anywhere. And even at her worst, she has never folded, and she has never backed down, even when faced with a superior athlete and a superior fighter. How is Marina going to dissuade her? She's not going to submit her. She's not going to out-wrestle her for five rounds. She could possibly outstrike her. That's a 50-50 proposition because Dern's more durable and Dern hits harder.
Yeah. I definitely don't think I'm on the Rodriguez side with you. I'm not sure if you still are. I definitely want to see weight cuts even still. I personally think that the narrative to fade in this fight is the under. I think that Mackenzie Dern has fallen in love with her striking. I think that, especially after the Randa fight that ended really quickly, I think she's itching to show the improvements she made. And then that's over a year ago now. She had the Nunes fight, and she didn't, you know, after the Janjarova fight, the Nunes fight went super quick too. I bet she wants to show her striking and her wrestling improvements. And I think in a 5-round fight, she finally gets the atmosphere to do that. And she may still get the submission like in round 3. I don't think a little sweat is going to stop her from locking in a fucking arm.
Over 2.5. Plus 105.
Listen, that 2.5 number just gets me jazzed. I like maybe to start round 3, but I just really, I like Mackenzie Dern and maybe over 1.5 at plus 175 because I'm addicted to that plus money. Otherwise, you can get Mackenzie Dern in the over 1.5 at minus 135. Like, I mean, what's her money line? Her money line is plus one
minus 170.
So, yeah, I mean, I would take 35 cents off to go half a round. I mean, I'm cool with that, I guess. I don't think that Marina is going to be
like she did with Esparza fight. I think she's going to be heavy on that lead foot, you know, kind of crouch down and ready for takedowns. And I don't think that she's going to swing heavy. I think she's going to be patient, and she's going to do everything she can to get up. And what we also saw in the Jandaroba fight, not that Rodriguez is as good of a submission artist as Jandaroba, but like going to the ground with Dern doesn't necessarily mean you're dead. Yes, you could, and it very well may eventually. You don't want to hang out there, but I mean, how much time did Dern have of control? And Jandaroba was fine.
Well, I mean, that's the other thing that I see with Marina is that she has the good body triangle from the bottom to close her guard, and she throws those elbows, and then she's just good. She's long, and defensively, she's just very difficult to get to pass her guard to get to the next step in the progression. And then, you know, you see Esparza drop down and go for these heel hooks and get absolutely punished for it. But I mean, she had like 4 minutes of control before it. So yeah, I understand her looking for a finish.
Dern's not great getting people down, but if I recall, when she does get people down, they don't generally, yeah, even if she doesn't submit, they don't get back up.
Right.
And if anything else, she's could literally.
Do you see her traps and arms?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, she could literally just hold Marina up against the cage for the entire round, just clinch her and hold her up and just short punch and hold her like that. I mean, she really could. She physically has bullied everybody. The question really is, which one of them is going to make the breakthrough? Marina has never beaten any sort of top level athlete, and Dern has never beaten any sort of top level fighter. And they haven't fought many. They've both gotten favorable matchups.
Right.
I mean, Phil Watterson was a favorable matchup. Nina Nunes was a favorable matchup. So yeah, that really told us nothing. But against this caliber of athlete, Marina usually loses. The kind of, I mean, I guess you could say since Marina beat Hibas, she's shown that she's the caliber of fighter that Dern would lose to, but I don't know that for sure.
Do we give any credit to that MMA math? She beat Hibas and she lost to Hibas.
I think it's styled.
Third UFC fight. That's so do I.
Also, Dern was coming off her pregnancy for that fight, so that was her first fight back. That's another thing. But listen, I mean, ultimately, I still do lean the Marina side because of the price. Because of the price, you know.
Yeah.
And I will say, if Dern was the underdog here, I probably would be leaning towards that way. I just think this is the toughest matchup. This is the toughest matchup for either fighter so far. And I think if this fight does stay standing on the feet, that Dern's defensive capabilities are nowhere near as good as her aggression and her offense have shown to be. And I definitely think those knees in the clinch are a real thing from Marina. I've seen her not stop people so much, but definitely put a hurting on them at points. And, you know, it does stick out in my mind that Calvillo survives, has a 10-8 third round. So that's not great. But
the Michelle Watterson thing doesn't lay in fight taking her down. I mean,
yeah, exactly. You know, so that's why, you know, maybe that over really is the way to go. 2.5 plus 105. I really don't think Dern gets an early finish. And that's what I keep coming back to. I just don't see how she wins a decision, but maybe it's just the late finish. Maybe that's what it is.
Dern's won a lot of decisions in her career though.
Yeah.
Well, I just,
why are you worried about her cardio? I don't really understand.
No, I just don't. I think she loses the stand up. So, and I don't think that she gets the fight down in three rounds to win three rounds with control. But hey, she could prove me wrong. Like I said, I am biased.
Once you're gassed, dude, if she spent 10 minutes on her back in that first two rounds, like she's you just
kind well, of start, I just don't, just but told, I don't see that happening. I just don't see that happening.
I'm worried about if it gets to a clinch or exchanges. I believe Dern has enough of durability to handle the power of Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. I don't know that Rodriguez's cardio is good enough to constantly defend those takedowns and still have the spring in her step in round mm-hmm. two or round three. She might have a good round one, but round two, round three, mm-hmm. all those grappling exchanges, I feel that's where she's gonna get a half step slow, and Dern, as bad as she's been, has never really gassed in any fight she's been in. She's gone to a lot of decisions.
So hey, maybe I'm sniffing a little bit too much on the dog of the day type of idea.
Have you been hanging out with Agapova? Is that why you're sniffing?
Oh, crackhead action.
A little. But yeah, you know.
Didn't Marina drop the Calvillo and Esparza both of those round one 10-8s?
Was that no, no, no. It was round three. It was round three versus Calvillo and round one versus Marcos. Oh, okay. So it was two completely opposite. That's why Marcos, I was like, I've seen her come back and look better as the fight went on. But you're right. I mean, listen, Dern's got the physicality. My coming away from it, my play of the day, our play of the day remains the parlay, our two-legger. And that's going to be the one I put the most money on. Am I still going to put money on Moreno? Let me see the face-offs. Let me see how it's going. Maybe just that over 2.5. But listen, guys, it's been a long-winded one. And we've had a great time. Schwan, thank you so much for coming back, especially doing this live stream, man. This is great.
It was fun, man. I like you said, you're like MMA can kind of be a soul-sucking venture. But like doing y'all show, interacting with y'all, even online or interacting on the show, is one of the things where you're like something you look forward to. I'm like, my day is gonna be shitty, but hey, live,
what a guy!
It's gonna be great. We had you, man.
Had to get you back.
Hey, anytime y'all want, man, I'm glad to do it. This is like always a highlight of my week. I mean, I like my show and all, but this is a highlight of me.
And let me tell you, man, you're our first guest on our live show. So you came on last time. You know, it's just so great always having you on.
Was that the first black guest? Because that counts too.
Hell yeah, there we go. So it's a trifecta, right?
Yeah, but we love it.
Thank you so much. Thank you guys for tuning in. Throw us a like, subscribe. Guru, take us away, man.
Yeah, listen, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. Like TB just said, please follow us on YouTube, subscribe to our channel, follow us on Instagram at Chronic Combat Conversations, follow us on Twitter at Chronic Combat. You can find me at Guru Scouting MMA on Twitter, Instagram, Verdict, and Tapology. You can find my partner, TB Scouting MMA on Instagram, Verdict, Tapology.
Oh, yeah. And then what about Schwan? Where can we find him? Oh, my God. Guru cut out. It's okay. I'll take us away. I can't hear him. But, yeah. So,
amazing. Sorry about that. I hit the mute on my thing. And nice. We got our amazing guest, Black Jordan Breen, Schwan Humes. Schwan Humes in the building. Awesome. Always having
I just wanted to always say, anybody who listens to the show, these guys – they really love the sport. They make it fun to talk about. If I ever see them comment on any social media about a fight, I got to figure out what they're thinking because I respect their opinion. And I don't respect many people's opinions because most people don't know what the hell they're talking about. That's including coaches in MMA camps. I don't listen a lot because they're idiots too. No offense. Some of them are really good. A lot of them are not. So really I love these guys. That. I think you should support these guys. I have a great time on the show. And anytime you see anything they're associated with, you should support it. I know I do. Every time I try to retweet everything and send people as many people as I can to the show because y'all are great guys and great at your craft, great show, very professionally run, tons of fun. Highlight of my week every time I get to do the show.
I love that.
You're the man.
Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you. You guys are great. Anytime you let me know, I'll be here for you.
We love that. Seriously, that means everything. Guys, till the next live stream, thank you so much for tuning in. We will see you next week, we hope, for Dumont versus whomever.
What's the run of those ratings?
Get that ESPN money.
The rest of the card actually looks like better than this week's card, but that main event has just
that will turn people off. I'm not watching the whole card to see that. No. Yeah. I'll catch you on the replay.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.